outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey.
Well, Kyle, here we are. We're only 5 hours late today.
Yes, we are 5 hours late. It was definitely not the day that I had planned it to be. We are in preparation to take off on our trip to Scotland. And my daughter found out had gotten exposed to a staph infection. And then the school freaked out and had us come and get our other daughter. And we've been dealing with antibiotics and praying about, Lord, please let us be able to go on this trip because our plane tickets and a couple of our hotel rooms are non-refundable. And I mean, just all
that's what happens when you get the cheap seats.
Oh my gosh, it is what happens when you get the cheap seats. That is absolutely right. But yeah, it seems like it's kind of settling down a little bit. We were able to get my oldest daughter on antibiotics and get her on an ointment cream. But man, it was one of those days where it got upended pretty rapidly and definitely spent some time in my room praying against the thief of joy. Cause I just really felt like it was kind of almost like a jab from the enemy a little bit today of like, okay, you think you're going to be able to get to go away with your wife and enjoy, you know, 5-6 days of peace and quiet with the two of you and exploring a country together. I'm going to cut the legs out from underneath that. There was an icky feel that was in the midst of part of the day today. And so definitely had to spend a little bit of time reconnecting with Father's heart and checking in with him and just seeing, all right, Lord, this is up to you. And you are the one that has the authority here to clear the way for us to be able to go on this trip. So, but as of right now, we're still moving forward and we're just recording a little bit later this evening. So
yeah, we are. I've had a few battles myself this last week or so.
Oh yeah. How so?
I don't know. I've been trying to work on this book that Toby and I are working on and yeah. It's a good place now. We're trying to piece it all together and got some insight for that. But every time I work on it, I feel really weird. I feel this kind of oppressive feel, and it has nothing to do with the book because I'm really excited about it, but yeah. I really just, maybe it's some chemo cycle, maybe it's something like that, and I've been mostly passing it off, but I've also had some trouble sleeping, which is part of my chemo cycle. Mm-hmm. I got thinking the other day, this may just be the enemy's attempt to push me away from this thing, because I've never had this kind of thing, because I don't have it during the day when I'm doing other things, but when I sit down to work on the book, I get this oppressive feel in my head, this kind of throbbing thing. So me and Jesus have been talking about it and saying, do I just gut through this or is there something else going on? But anyway, so I've been having some of those questions myself for different reasons.
Interesting. How have you sorted through that over your lifetime, especially as you've been navigating stuff over the last 3-4 years? How do you untangle what is my chemo cycle? What is spiritual warfare? What is just me living in today's world? Like, how do you sort through those things? How do you determine if that oppression, where it's coming from, what the author of that is?
I don't know that I do, honestly. Okay. I mean, I get to my quiet place and I have some time with Jesus about it. And my thoughts are, if it is oppression, then how do I pray against that? How do I fight that? So I don't mind if that's what it is, Jesus, then let's have that out. And I did this morning. And you know, when I wrote later in the morning, I didn't have it today. So I don't know. Those are how I piece things together like that. Pray for that. I watch the symptoms. If they come and go, when are they coming and going? But now I'm a little more tuned into what is that. But I'm not driven to try to find the source of it. Like, I don't know if that's important to me. If it's oppression, I'm praying like it might be, and that move that, inviting others to do that as well. Yeah. And if it's just part of the chemo cycle, then I don't mind praying for physical touch that would make me freer to work ahead on this thing. So I don't know that I try to reach that conclusion. I just put it there. And then if something happens where it becomes obvious it's one thing or another, then that's how I get to it.
Yeah. Have you ever navigated angst around it? Because, man, when I was, especially early on in my more charismatic days of walking with God, let's say,
Interesting way to phrase it.
There was a lot of angst around finding the specifically the demonic source of what is causing the issue. And that was, I mean, I remember, especially in some of the YWAM training that I went through, and then even some of the groups that I was a part of after that, getting into some of this dialogue, that it almost had like a, I don't know, there was just a weird feeling of angst or uncertainty, or like there wasn't any peace in it. There wasn't any rest as we were seeking Father's heart. It was this like drivenness or anxiety or sometimes even fear. And it's like, that doesn't seem like where Father would have me land as I'm trying to explore this or seek this out or untangle it with him.
Yeah, I think I had some of that at younger ages. It was always kind of like important to name it. If you found the right thing and could name it, then it would have to yield to God's power. And until then, it didn't have to. It just, I think the multiplicity of times I went down this road and how ineffective it continued to be, I think won me out of that. And that's so fair. I don't at all have that angst anymore. But I think as I've learned to go by NATO living, not attached to outcome, I have a lot less angst about everything, because in the past, it was always, okay, if it's cancer, then I've got to do this, I got to get healed. And there's just all this angst about trying to get things to happen. And now I'm much more in a NATO thing of just not attached to outcomes. So God, you know, in your case, whether I go on this trip or not, it's in your hands, not mine. Yeah. And I'm happy to pray. I'm happy to war for anything that you want me to war about. I'm not happy to war out of my angst.
Yeah.
And I think just the how often it failed, how often it just didn't bear fruit. And it, like you said, it puts the focus in the wrong place, puts it on me instead of on Jesus and what he's doing in my life. So abandon it. Well, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Kyle Rice.
I heard a definition of community this week that I've really been lost in. I think it's so real.
Ooh, okay.
And it was someone describing our meeting in Boise, and she just said it was fellowship in the truest sense. Human, messy, sacred.
I like that.
Oh, and I love that, because relationships are all of that. They're human, they're messy, and they're also very sacred as God inhabits them and as good things happen out of them. And I think I wondered, because I've for a long time really tuned into the conformity dynamics of religious institution. Once you institutionalize Christianity, then you set rules around it and you get people to follow the rules, guidelines, even for worship service, what we do here and there, who's on the stage, who's not on the stage. There's guidelines for everything. Mm. And part of it is, you know, let all things be done decently and in order. And by the time you bring order to something, you've ordered the life out of it for the most part.
Yeah.
I don't think that's what Paul was talking about when he says, let things be done decently and in order. But that's been the text pastors use to exert control over things.
Yeah.
And I find relationships are very human because of that. They're very messy. But when God habits them, they're sacred. They become incredibly sacred in the space that God moves. And if you're not willing to handle the messy, you're often going to miss the sacred. And that's why I love that description of it. I think as you journey through something with somebody, as things are a little less programmed and a little more wild, as someone says in one of the letters they wrote about the 1,000th episode of the God Journey, talked about feral.
Yes.
Feral Christians. Yeah. I thought that's kind of funny. As a little more messy, it's also more powerfully sacred. And I think it's the same thing of God bringing order out of chaos is his doing. Mm. And when we do it, we end up exerting human control and choking the life out of it.
It's interesting that you bring that up, because my father-in-law and then my wife's grandma were actually out visiting us this last weekend, and they were spending some time with us and got into a really interesting conversation with my father-in-law. He has been a spiritual explorer for a long time and is not isolated to one faith or belief system, but really likes digging into different faith perspectives, etc. And he and I got into a really unique conversation this weekend about Christianity. And he was raised Methodist, grew up in a conservative Christian home. That was kind of his world background, etc. And what really derailed him from, I would say, the religion or the brand of Christianity was he was going through the Vietnam era, and there was all of these dichotomies that he was hearing being preached from the pulpit of thou shalt not kill, but then you need to do your duty. You need to go over and you need to kill these Vietnamese people for the sake of the US military. And just these like different tensions that as a 12, 13, 14 year old, he was really wrestling with. And as in his naivete, he decided to ask questions about what was being spoken from the pulpit. And that really didn't go over very well, that a 12 or 13 year old would be challenging what the pastor was saying from the pulpit.
Kind of like Jesus in the temple at 12.
I would agree. I think there are some similarities there. And it was just so intriguing to hear him processing it, because he circled back to, I deeply love your Jesus. I do not love your Christianity. So by that, he means I deeply love the life that Jesus lived, the teachings and principles that I get as I study scripture, but I have a really hard time with the organizational institution, because for him, it felt like as soon as he started to be curious and started to explore and started to say, okay, where does God's heart fit in this? Instead of there that being welcomed, the life was choked out of it. They didn't like the messy. They wanted the certainty. They wanted the black and white instead of this is a really challenging time for our nation to sort out how do we navigate this, and let's ask some very raw and authentic questions. And it was a really powerful dialogue. I'd love to get to hear what his thoughts were on that.
Yeah, I think when I look back at some of that time in my life, there's, you know, like there's a lot of double talk in religion.
Yeah.
You know, like Jesus satisfied everything he'd ever require of you. And yet, here's the things you need to do to keep God happy. Yeah. And when you ask questions about that, it does make people uncomfortable. I remember making me uncomfortable going, I don't know how to defend all this. Because, yeah, you're right. If you look too closely, there's a lot of double talk going on to hold this together and keep the messy out of it instead of encouraging. And I think particularly when you get older, mid to older teens, that's the time you want them to question and to ask things. If you double down on conformity at that age, then it's going to blow up in their 20s and 30s. Yeah. And that because they didn't get a chance to make faith their own.
Yes.
They fell in line with the family dictates, and they didn't explore, is this God real or not? And we don't want them exploring that, because we barely hold on to it ourselves sometime when you're caught up in that religious stuff.
Well, and the challenge too is that it blows up in their 20s and 30s, or right then and there, it blows up the relationship. Because, I mean, a lot of the time I hear this a lot where it's like, no, I was in my teens, I was questioning whatever belief system it was, and why do we do this? And yet, as a result, because they doubled down and said, no, you have to conform, I'm in my identity formation stage, and they just blew up the relationship with their either parents or pastor or mentor or whatever it might have been.
Yeah, I hear that too. So what was the best thing you heard this week, Kyle?
So mine actually came, I think, from the same letter. I'm fairly certain from the same letter. So you sent me this letter from Boise, Idaho, and your time in Boise. And I loved it because it was a unique perspective, because it was written from the perspective of somebody sitting in the chair watching one of these groups go happen and unfold and the conversations happen. And that was awesome, because when you sent it to me and I read through it, I was like, man, I love this, because I'm in the similar boat when I lead groups or facilitate spaces for people. It's like, I wonder how people are actually experiencing this. Like, I got to ask them. Like Jess asked me the other day about the backpacking trip, and she's like, well, how'd it go? And it's like, well, you should ask the students. Like, I don't know. Like, I think it went well, but I don't know.
I always feel that way. Particularly we talk about it on the podcast, and I give my observations and thoughts of the day.
Yeah.
But this was somebody didn't actually write this for me, wrote it for a posting they did with this group of people that's kind of fallen out of this cultish group. Has got a place where they can post things and share things together.
Oh, cool.
And she wrote this up for that group.
Oh.
But then she sent me a copy. She said, I want you to see this. I wrote it, and it's my observations of the day. And I was really, really touched by it, because I often get the same thing. You know, people ask me, how did it go? And I'm like, I enjoyed myself. I thought it was helpful, yeah. But boy, the proof is in what, how did they respond to it? What did they see? And this letter so touched me because it's everything I would hope people would experience when in a room like that for a day.
Yeah. Well, the comment that she, one of the comments that really stood out to me that she made in this posting was, she was talking about healing and she was talking about just kind of reflecting on how she was feeling after, as she's driving away. And she made the comment, as I drove home, I felt a strange mix of hope and heaviness. Hope because I know I am not alone on this path. Heaviness because the healing ahead feels long. That phrase, the healingness ahead feels long. Man, I had three conversations this week with different individuals that landed right there, that had that same lament. And to hear her put that in those words was really intriguing to me because the conversations that I got into this week, they really revolved around, okay, if we're doing the work or we've been spending a lot of time pressing into some of the hard spaces or exploring some of those hard spaces, it feels long. It feels like I've been in this slog, this healing process, this deep dive for a long time. And one of the individuals was sharing a little bit about how they got surprised by their fear of living in the happiness, of living in the joy, of living in the healing, that they've been in the work so long and they've been told, you know what, you press into this, you have the hard conversations, you don't suppress the emotions, you do the work, you get counseling, all these things, it's going to be worth it. Well, now they're starting to move into the space where they're actually able to live out of the healing a little bit. And they're like, it's freaking them out a little bit. They're not sure how to live in that space anymore. And, or what is it like to live in that healing in a new way? And that the healing ahead feels long. I hear that a lot from people who are starting this journey. And then it was intriguing to also have a conversation with somebody who's been in one of those spaces for a while and them coming out of it and yet feeling awkward or disoriented as they're living in a more healthy space.
Yeah, I know how to live struggling.
Yes.
I don't know how to live without the struggle being there.
Yes,
I hear that.
Exactly.
But that's why I encourage people who are in a process of healing, or Sarah and I talk about it in her journey right now, is to look for the joy each day. That the joy is not finally getting past the problem. Mm. In this case, you know, finally getting some of the religious overtures shrugged out of your life. It's easy to leave a thing.
Yeah.
It's another thing to let the thing leave you. All the stuff that it's put inside you, the obligation, the guilt, the shame, the struggle. But I encourage people, even with chronic illness or sickness or whatever, don't let your joy be set on the day of healing. Mm. Find joy in each day. If it's a song you enjoy, if it's being out in nature a little bit, if it's sitting in Sarah's garden, find the joy in each day. And it may be small because the struggle's large, but it doesn't give the feel that I won't be better until this is all fixed. Mm. Because God breathes in his better in bits every day. And I think when we look for that kind of joy, then my joy isn't in the destination, as they always say, it's in the journey.
Mm. I like that because I think so often when the hope is set on the joy or the healing destination, we become unacquainted with joy, right? Like we're used to the slog, we're used to the struggle, where we're used to the adversity. But if we're not looking for the joy in the day, then it's almost like we get so disoriented or unfamiliar with joy or healing that when it starts to move in a very real way in our lives, we don't know what to do with it. How would you encourage someone to look for joy, especially like, I mean, you and Sarah have navigated a very spicy last 3 years between the stuff that Sarah's been going through and then your cancer diagnosis. You guys have had to put this into practice in some pretty intentional ways, haven't you, over the last few years?
It doesn't feel all that intentional. Somehow it feels like the relationship with God supports what we're going through. So I think that's, you know, 30 years of living love, 30 years of leaning into that space of I know that I'm loved by God, irregardless of what circumstance is going on that would argue to the contrary. Hmm. And God making himself known to me in those spaces, to me, that's my joy. When I'm just spending time with him. And I feel that his joy just welling up in my heart, like I'm holding both the pain. I feel the pain in God's heart for the brokenness of the world. And when I read stuff about Gaza and bombing kids trying to get aid, or stuff going on in Syria, or stuff going on in our country, somebody driving a car into a crowd of people, I can't imagine how God holds all the pain of that in his heart, but I know he does. And so I do spend time trying to watch with God inside that pain. But I also spend time where I'm looking for, where's the joy today? Because whatever pain God feels for the brokenness of humanity, and I'm sure it's significant, like we would our own children, if they're going through something difficult, particularly when they're older and prodigal, and the pain that that hurts in a parent's heart is great, but he's also the most joyful presence in the universe. I want my joy to be in you, that your joy might be full. So I always look for some slice of joy every day. You know, what makes our heart glad? What just seems like a blessing? I've got a friend going through some very difficult things back in Florida, and every now and again, he goes for a walk in the evening, and he sends me a picture of sunset, the beautiful sunset he's beholding. And he said, that's the reminder right there that he's with me, and I'm not alone in this. And I love that. I love looking for slices of joy that come up alongside whatever the struggle might be.
And I almost wonder if that also aligns with, so they, even in some of the counseling theory, so cognitive behavioral therapy and some of the other forms of formal therapy, one of the big things that they talk about is where you're orienting your mind, where you're orienting your focus. What are you choosing to invest a lot of your time and energy on? And I think that's a finding a rhythm of looking for joy. So making that as a habit of looking for those reminders of, no, there is a very loving and active God in the universe that's all around me and loves sending me those brief, even just little glimpses of, I see you, I love you, I delight in you, I am here. And I think the more that you get into a rhythm of observing those, looking for them, being expectant of them, the more you get to see them in the day-to-day on a higher level of frequency. Because I think it's easy when we get on the healing journey, it's like, okay, I'm going to embrace the suck for a period of time and I'm just going to slog through this, instead of saying, okay, what does rest, love, and play look like in the process of healing?
That's important for us to kind of embrace. And I know for me, one of the things that I didn't mention that I find real joy in is good conversations with people on journeys. Yeah. And we had a couple here last week from our past who came up last weekend. They came for the weekend. We sat in Sarah's garden for 2 days and just caught up on each other's lives. And I am renewed by those kinds of conversations. I always am. So I look for them. And if I haven't had one in a bit, there's 10, 12 people I can call and say, hey, let's get together and just not try to share something alive, just to be together.
Yeah.
And see what comes up as we just share what we're seeing about Jesus together.
Are there other things from that letter that you want to explore, just out of curiosity?
Well, it says a lot of really gracious things about me, yeah. But I wouldn't mind going through the whole letter, because I think this is what, if I'm meeting with people, and I'm getting a lot more requests right now, particularly from this group in various places in the world, to come and hang out a little bit, this is what I want people to come away with. Now, whether they do or not depends on whether this actually happens. Yeah. But what I love about this is how I felt the day went. And to see it reflected black, both the joys and the challenges of it, and they're both here, was a real blessing to me. But it's, again, I don't want to read it because it makes too much of a fuss over me.
Would you like me to read it?
If you want to.
Yeah.
You think it's worth it? Yeah.
Yeah. So it starts off, finding each other outside the walls is the title of the email or the post that they created. And it says, a personal reflection on a day with Wayne Jacobson in Boise. Driving over from Washington to Boise, I wasn't sure exactly what I was walking into. Oh gosh, I definitely have had that experience a few times. What am I getting myself into here?
I have to.
I had read Finding Church and been deeply impacted by Wayne Jacobson's words, but the idea of gathering with around 40 others, mostly fellow ex-members of the 2x2 church, felt both exciting and strangely vulnerable. What would it be like to sit face to face with others who carried the same spiritual wounds Would it feel safe? Would it feel real? The space was warm and welcoming. The hosts, locals from Boise, had rented a room that felt more like a large living room than anything else. Comfortable seating, a corner for coffee and snacks, and people softly greeting others like long-lost family. In a way, that's exactly what it was. Wayne flew in from California just for us. It had been 3 years since he had done a gathering like this, and he shared that he doesn't plan events or charge to speak. He simply goes where he feels led. We were one of those places.
I like how she sets up for this, to be honest. Yeah. I like how she's honest about, I don't know what to expect. I'm a little apprehensive. Is it going to be real? The question, is it going to be safe?
Yes.
And that's, I know when I come into a room like that and I'm kind of moderating the day, that's the most important ambition I have. Can this room feel safe for people to ask what they need to ask, notice what they need to notice, and struggle with what they need to struggle with? And some of that is not, I mean, I can make it that way, but there's sometimes other people's comments and questions make a room unsafe. And again, that's, we've joked about this a lot, but it's, I see it almost every week of my life. Somebody shares something vulnerable and then some know-it-all has got to give them advice about how to fix it. And it just shuts things down. Fortunately, we didn't have any of that that day. Mm. People were in this together, struggling, open and kind. And that counted for a lot.
What I really enjoy too is I feel like, especially anytime I have gone to be with a group, even if I was, for example, the person that was being invited to come and be a part of the group, it's like, man, what am I getting into here? Like, what's going to happen? I'm thinking about specifically a group in Michigan that I went to spend some time with, and just great group. It was a group of guys that supposedly meet every week and just hang out and do life together and whatever. And to me, it was like, okay, this sounds good, but what is this going to be like? And so I showed up with some fairly high level of apprehension of like, what is this going to be like? And it actually was, that was almost 4 years ago now. And it launched into friendships that have maintained. And in fact, I am hanging out with the person who invited me to that meeting originally in Scotland. And so like when we're out there, he's going to be out there at the same time. And wow. I mean, just the opportunity to be able to find those people that are safe, that do feel real, and then seeing how God continues to open up those relationships.
Yep.
So she goes on and she says, he started by sharing his own story. I was struck by how unguarded he was as he talked about being pushed out of his own church, the pain it brought into his family and marriage, and how the season reshaped his walk with God. There wasn't a hint of bitterness in his voice, just raw honesty and a kind of peace that made me lean in. It wasn't about theology or answers. It was about presence, about being met by God outside the systems we thought we needed. After Wayne spoke, the meeting opened into an organic dialogue, people sharing freely and bravely. Some wept as they described years of spiritual abuse or how the ministry failed to show even basic care in their most vulnerable moments. Others wrestled out loud with their anger, how to move through it, not around it. The conversations ranged from big picture issues like patriarchy and power structures to small, quiet ways legalism had chipped away at our autonomy and our sense of self. There were moments when the pain in the room felt heavy, almost too much, but then someone would speak up with a reflection or a question that cracked open just enough light to keep us moving forward. It felt like healing in real time. I love that.
I love that because I think that's the way God does stuff. You know, things get heavy. Things get like, just, I'm not sure I can take anymore. Right. And then something funny happens. Some light thing happens. And all of a sudden you get a chance to catch your breath, reset. And it doesn't feel so overwhelming anymore.
Yeah. It doesn't feel like it's going to consume you all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Wayne offered gentle guidance throughout, not trying to fix anyone's story, but encouraging us to keep our focus on Jesus, not the institution. He reminded us that emotions we feel, grief, anger, confusion, don't need to be suppressed or polished. I like that, polished specifically.
Yep.
They're part of the process, but we don't have to let them define the road ahead. We broke for lunch and then continued the conversation, spending about 6 to 7 hours together in all. It was fellowship,
not in the programmed surface level way we once knew, but in the truest sense, human, messy, sacred. As I drove home, I felt a strange mix of hope and heaviness. Hope because I know I am not alone on this path. Heaviness because the healing ahead feels long. But I also carried a quiet sense of gratitude that somehow, in a rented room in Boise, God met us in our honesty. No stage, no performance, just people finding each other outside the walls.
Telling you, when I read this the first time she sent it to me, and just really, really grateful. We've not used her name here intentionally, but I don't know that we couldn't since she posted it publicly. But really touched that this was her observation, that she'd take the time to reflect and send it to me. And just really grateful, because I think the Wayne of old could not have had a meeting like this. Mm. I think this, what I see in it is a lot of growth. I used to have angst going into meetings like this. And I was out to dinner the day before with some friends. They were saying, what are you going to do tomorrow? I'm going, I have no idea. I have no idea. I said, I don't know what I'm walking into yet.
Yeah.
But I've been in enough things like this that even when they seem to go bad early on, somehow God brings light to them anyway. And there's just a trust now that I move into these things, that if I'm calm and quiet and listening, there'll be direction. Things will come up and it will turn out okay. And to me, this is more than okay. Yeah. If just one person took this away, or if others took the same thing away, then that day was more than worth it for me. There's some sad stuff here when she talks about the ministry failed to show even basic care in our most vulnerable moments. Yeah. And that's not just true of more cultish groups like this. I think that's true of a lot of religious groups. Yeah. The vulnerable moments are met again with advice or a scripture quote to say, you don't have the right to feel that way, or you're unbelieving if you have that struggle or that question. And I just makes my heart hurt that the environments we've incubated to somehow have the body of Christ take shape in are not protective of the most vulnerable. Mm. And they're not places where honesty and emotion is rewarded. It's more important to us, as I said earlier, to make sure everything's not messy, everything's in order. And so we keep that oppressive order in place that keeps us from being real. And then we wonder why we don't have community. People, I don't have friends here. Because I'm most pretending to do what I need to have done because of what other people are expecting of me, than I am encouraged to be honest, to struggle, to come to the light alongside my friends. I love that we could have a day like this. There's some people with us that day that were not part of this group. And they had a part in it too, in the day, and sharing their struggles and interacting with some of the things that I've written or things we've talked about on this podcast. And so it touches my heart deeply.
I think that's, for me, that's also part of the beauty of this is I also, especially when in the earlier days, felt a lot of performance pressure when I would get invited to go and speak somewhere or be a part of something or to lead a group into something or facilitate an experience. And for me, it's been a lot of shifting from, okay, I have to step up and perform and make sure this is an amazing experience for these people, whoever it is, to, okay, I'm just going to go and be, and this isn't, I'm not the one authoring this. Like, the Holy Spirit is the one that is authoring this. God is the one that is very much in the midst of the process of bringing this together. And so especially for those out there who are looking to create space for community or wanting to work alongside of other people, don't succumb to that performance pressure of, I have to be the one that comes through. No, God is the one that's coming through. He's coming through in ways that you can't even begin to imagine. And he's probably orchestrating some questions, conversations, curiosities that you couldn't prep for if you tried. So just be present. Sure. Just be curious. Be available and see what God has up his sleeve. Like, I love that, because so often when I think about religion, I think about the necessity of it being polished. I mean, I'm thinking about the megachurch that I worked in L.A., in some regards, people would say, oh, no, they were just being very attuned to their craft, that they wanted to bring a high level of excellence to what they did. Okay, that's fair. But when it's so polished and the need to bring this exquisite performance every single time is the driving force, then you miss so much of what God's up to in the room and with the people that are around you. When it's all about, okay, I've got to have this this polished thing that I'm presenting so that people feel like they got the most out of it or whatever. I mean, whatever expectations that the people who are leading or facilitating the experience think that they have to meet.
Or the people think when you go away, Matt's a really great speaker. He's yes. funny. He's insightful. And I remember when I was in the old days of doing that kind of speaking, and this is quite a trajectory arc for me. Part of this, looking back to when I haven't done this in 3 years, I haven't been away from Sarah in a room interacting with people at this level. It's been more personal conversations in a lot of different ways. Yeah. But it's kind of taken me back to the trajectory, the whole arc of being the speaker everybody wants to hear, being up in front of the room, being funny, being emotive, getting the audience in the palm of your hand, all the things that we say good speaking is.
Yeah.
And I could do some of that. Yeah. And then how God's just wrestled me away. And I mean, wrestled sometimes, wrestled me away from having to be the hero on the stage and having to have a room full of people who are waiting with bated breath for every word I have to say. And a lot of it was that I just saw how ineffective it was.
Yeah.
When I traveled around, when I started traveling and I'd do these kinds of seminars and speak at things, I got invited almost everywhere I went to come back and plant a church there. Mm. Because at the end of the day, it was, man, we need to hear that guy all the time.
Yeah.
It wasn't, oh, we could walk with Jesus too. And I remember one email I got from a guy in Florida. He said, when you left town, I didn't want to know Wayne better. I wanted to know Wayne's father better. Mm. And that for me was a major little chunk of something shifting here, because to me, that's the more important thing, is that people are in tune with Christ in them, the hope of glory, that they're seeing him in them, that they have some hope that I can go on a journey similar to Wayne's journey. It doesn't have to be the same. It just is deeper and deeper into the reality of who God is and being liberated from all those external pressures that religious entities have put on us as a substitute for the life of God, or the promise that this is the way to get to the life of God.
Yes.
And yet they aren't. Man, you just ram against that brick wall until your head hurts and you still don't find that life, because that life is not found in the institution, in the speaker, in the book, in the things that we go looking for it in. It's in him.
Yeah.
And finding the connection with him that opens the doorway in our heart to me, when that happens with people, it's beautiful. And then when friendship comes out of that, the host people, when I left there, said, you're family now. When I was leaving, you're family now. And sometimes that could seem like a threat, but not with these people. That was like fun, cool. And I don't know if I'll ever be up there again, but the connections that have come out of this and seeing how people who are treading some very deep water, when you think about someone who has left something they've been in for multiple generations and didn't just leave it, concluded it was dangerous and it was hurtful. And it's destroying people I love, and it's not being accountable in the way it said it was the whole time we were in it. And now you move out of that, you lose friendships, families, you're judged, you're shamed, you're told, people are told that you're a dangerous person to be with now. Yeah. I know how scary that is. And I admire people so much who go, I can't help but take this journey. I don't want to. I wish things were just cleaner there and we could put a Band-Aid on it and everything would feel better. But their heart has been so disillusioned that they can't find a way back in. And as scary as it is to launch off in the unknown, they still do it.
Yeah.
And I admire people like this so much, because I think it takes a lot of courage when you say the status quo isn't working.
Yeah.
And I've got to go find out if this God is as real as Jesus seemed to say he was.
I was really reflecting back on what she was talking about. She made the comment that you were processing about being pushed out, and said there wasn't a hint of bitterness in his voice, just raw honesty and a kind of peace that made me lean in. I thought about that and I was like, man, that has been some of the real distinct pointing areas for me when I encounter people or I read a book or I hear a song and there's a flavor to it that makes me want to lean in. That's like, ooh, hold on a second. There is something here that transcends what my mind has come to know and is accessing a very deep part of my heart that has been longing to hear that truth, that insight, that nugget of wisdom. And man, that simple, subtle, ooh, I need to lean in here. This is a thin space. Whatever's happening here, whoever's having this conversation, whatever this book is, whatever it might be, there's a thin space happening here that I want to lean into because there's life that's in the midst of this conversation.
I like when she said at the end, it was about presence, about being met by God outside the systems we thought we needed.
Yeah.
If it becomes that, then that's where there's hope for all kinds of things to happen.
Yeah.
If it's just we're going to trade one system, I think it's always the temptation. We're going to trade one system for another. Or we're going to keep the same system and somehow get the white hats in charge instead of the black hats who took over. And instead of realizing that when you manage a system, even if you start with a white hat,
yes,
it will be black hat within years.
Yeah.
Because there's something that it dehumanizes, not only about the people who go to it. One book I read back, it was written back in the 60s or something. It said, the one the system dehumanizes the most are those who think they lead it. And it really is saying that there's a momentum in institutions that takes over.
Yeah.
And what you have to do to survive, it begins to control those who think they lead. So the tendency always is, okay, I've got to leave that system. The system wasn't bad. The people running it were bad. So let's try another system and get better people to run it. To maybe it was the system that warped our thinking, which is, and I think people who love religious systems and love creating them and organizing them never stop and ask the question, why didn't Jesus do anything that smacks of this? Why didn't he teach the disciples how to create a religious institution that wouldn't go bad? He didn't. It was all in the beauty of God in the wild. And I know that freaks people out who just say, boy, if you just let it be wild, then the selfish people are going to rue the day and it's going to be, it doesn't work that way. Jesus is able to manage his body. And if people are learning to love and respect and care, then that body in the wild is going to be beautiful. And you run into the selfish person, the control freak or whatever, it's easier to deal with them one-on-one.
Yeah.
Than when they get control of an organization and tell everybody else to shut up because they're closer to God than anyone else. Now it's almost impossible to dislodge that.
And that really reminds me, I got into a conversation with my father-in-law this weekend about God again in the wilderness, inviting his people to follow him, right? He's inviting them in the wild. Let me be your leader. Let me be the one who is guiding and directing and inspiring you and meeting your needs. And then all of a sudden it's like, no, 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 we want the king. And God's like, no, yes, the king is going to give you structure. The king is going to give you some formality and sense of certainty in some regards, even though it's a false sense of certainty. But he's also going to take your land. He's going to take your daughters. He's going to send your sons to war. and it's going to be, no matter how good the king is when he starts off, no matter how good he is, it will twist, corrupt, skew, alter who they are. So let me be the one that carries that burden on my shoulders. Like God continuously invites us into the wilderness where he's the one carrying kingdom, carrying life on his shoulders and inviting us to walk alongside of him to learn what it means to live in that.
And yet there's no end of our attempts to try to organize that his behalf.
Oh, absolutely.
God's given me the way to do this and we'll be more pure of heart. So we won't run into the obstacles other people have run into. The hubris of thinking that, I could resist all that, but, and maybe I could at this place in my journey, but I don't want to.
Yeah.
I have no hope that that system is going to help people the way my life gets to help people just by walking alongside them for a stretch, whether it's a weekend in Boise or whether it's a conversation in Sarah's garden. just walking alongside people, helping the hunger to know Jesus be stimulated, and finding those little glimpses of where the path is that leads me to life, and help them find some steps down that journey so that they can have it in their own lives. And when we lose sight of that, and suddenly we've got a system and a plan and a program to make a substitute for that, I think we don't do justice to people or God's work in us.
Yeah, that makes me think of a conversation that I had with a good friend of Jess and I's back in LA, and he was an extremely wealthy entrepreneur. And he and I were sitting down having a conversation with each other, and he said, "Kyle, I want you to teach me how you are able to live the life that you're living. What does it take to live like the way that you do? I want to learn how to do that." He's like, "I want you to teach me how to do that, and I will teach you how to be a millionaire." And I looked at him and I said, "I think the challenge is that a lot of the things that are going to make me a millionaire are going to oppose the way that I'm able to live the life that I'm currently living. The ways that the world would see fit to create a faith organization or create a belief system or create a morality code, it doesn't align with the way that God would want to do it." I mean, that's why I love him so much, is I love how wild he is. Again, thinking back to our last podcast about blowing out of the boxes, I love that he is claustrophobic. Like, that is so important to me, because if he wasn't, then I would be really good at shoving him into boxes. But thankfully, he's done a pretty good job of blowing out of them.
And perhaps the double-minded man is the one that says, "I want both.
Yeah.
I want to have the $1 million and I want to follow Jesus." And
yeah,
you know what? That's not our choice to make necessarily.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Follow me and let God care for you however he wants to. And if he wants you to have $1 million, he'll give you $1 million.
He will.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.